This is our number
10. It's time for the fastest 15 minutes of the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
Lots of world of news in a tidy little 15-minute package just for you. Welcome to our Fastest 15. So before I get into all of the news, I did want to I want to say thank you, first of all, to the folks out at Kenmore Air. Well, how about that for a setting?
Okay, you have to describe the setting for our listeners because, Okay. Yeah, it was incredible.
So when my daughter's then boyfriend, about 14 months ago, they were out of town, and he called to ask for her hand in marriage, which is very sweet.
I love that.
Yeah. And so then my daughter and I started talking about possible venues. And her fiancé is going to be a pilot.
Mm-hmm.
But he's going to be a commercial pilot. But right now he's flying for Kenmore Air. Back then, a year ago, he was like a dock boy. You know, he would help tie up the planes
nice. As
they come up to the dock. But he was working, doing all the studying so you could become a flight instructor. And then you get hours and you have to have 1,500 hours.
And good for him because there is a shortage of pilots, as we've heard.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's a future that looks good in that industry. And mainly because it does take 1,500 hours.
Yeah.
So I call up the owner of Kenmore Air, and we had done maybe the most memorable thing in our show's history involved Kenmore Air.
Yes.
And I'll just tell you that story really quick. But there was a high school basketball girl down in the Centralia, Chehalis area, WF West High School. And I'd met the coach there at a tournament a year or two earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And the coach called me up and he said, I don't even know why I'm calling you. Because I really didn't know the guy. But he was telling me about this wonderful girl on his team. Her dad passed away. And she was the youngest of, I believe, 9 or 10 siblings who were all around the country. And so they had to fly in all of her siblings from around the country for dad's memorial service. And they had to schedule it at a time that worked for everybody to get into town. And so it was going to be at 1 o'clock, I think 1 o'clock noon on a Saturday afternoon. The coach at this high school says, I think there's a chance my team could make the state championship game in Yakima, and it's at 5 o'clock. And he goes, can you think of any ideas for us to get her from her dad's memorial service to Yakima for the game? Because there's no way driving, impossible. So I call up Todd at Kenmore Air, and immediately he goes, we don't have that many planes flying in early mm-hmm. March. And then he goes, you know what? Let's make this work. We're going to find a way to make this work. And so our reporter, Brandy Cruz, went down to Centralia, went to this girl, Julie's dad's memorial service. This girl sang like an angel
mm-hmm.
at her dad's service. And then she and one of her sisters and Brandy, our reporter, they get on this Kenmore Air flight. Mm-hmm. They fly from dad's memorial service to Yakima, where Julie is the leading scorer and the MVP in the state championship game. And her team wins the state title. I mean, the swing of emotion.
Yeah.
Was
I mean,
incredible.
I actually get a little teary thinking about it. But it was a beautiful story. And Kenmore Air's contribution was, I mean, that was a big gift.
But that was kind of the extent of what I knew them. We had put mm-hmm. this thing together and it was magical. And we ended up, Brandy's story won 2 national Edward R. Murrow Awards.
I entered it into 2 different categories and she won both categories.
Yeah.
It was she told it beautifully.
It was incredible. And so, and Brandy had already left for Q13. So my wife and I got to go back to New York and
mm-hmm.
get those Murrows. And it was wonderful. So anyway, that was the extent of it. So that was, I don't know, 4 years ago. So I call up the same guy at Kenmore Air. I say, have you ever had a wedding there? And he goes, 2, mine and my cousin's. I said, would you ever think about a non-blood wedding? And they love my daughter's fiancé. And he goes, yeah, let's make this happen. And it just turned out to be, but I didn't know, you know, because my daughter, she produced this thing Like a producer.
And she produced it beautifully. First of all, so we walk in there. So it's right by the waterfront, and there's a beautiful dock.
Right at the north end of Lake Washington.
Yeah. And, you know, you've got the choir that your daughter was involved in. So they're singing.
The University of Washington Chorale was gorgeous.
So beautiful.
Yeah.
I mean, the sun had come out just for this occasion. Okay. And Dory, the two planes go flying overhead. The two float planes go flying overhead, and we're joking because we're sitting there, you know, and waiting for everything to start. And someone says, "Oh, they're waving at us. They're waving at us." I'm thinking, "Gosh, everyone on these float planes—they're so friendly." But then
we didn't tell people that was the arrival. So all the guys were in one plane, all the girls were in the other plane, and then as they, you know, were singing "God Only Knows" by the Beach Boys in a cappella. See, I'm going to get teary-eyed.
I know. But, I'm getting teary.
But, you know, the guys escorted the girls one by one, and we had it set up on the dock with Lake Washington behind them. And then we had two of the hangars, one for, you know, drinks to cocktail hour while we did all the family pictures. And then we opened
up. Wait. But you have to talk about how the part that was so emotional is when, you know, everyone started walking out of the planes and, you know, getting set up. Oh, my goodness. I mean, you were a wreck.
I was, I had tears streaming down my cheek, which is so embarrassing.
But we were all crying with you.
And I'm crying again now.
I know, but we were crying with you. I mean,
that was the problem, though, Ursula. I had no less than 20 people come up to me, and they all said, "I was fine until I saw you."
Oh, yeah, I know. We didn't want to look at you because we would be just a wet mess.
Yes, I know. and you know, earlier that afternoon, all of the gals were in our kitchen. They, you know, had one station where somebody was doing all their hair, another one where they were doing all their makeup. And I say to the makeup lady, I go, "Can you do something about these huge bags under my eyes?" And so after she finished all the girls, we sit down, and then I realize, oh, I'm going to be sobbing.
I said,
"Is this makeup going to run?"
Oh, you put it. So she had to put concealer on?
Yeah, she put on something. Because, yeah, these are forever pictures, Ursula. Yes, I had makeup on. I was wearing makeup on Saturday.
Okay, that's a tidbit I didn't know.
Yeah, well, she did a very nice, subtle job.
Oh, my goodness. But just to see, it was so beautiful to
frankly,
see you.
All she did was enhance my natural beauty.
Of course.
Yeah.
Okay, well, she did a beautiful job because I didn't see it.
Yeah.
So it wasn't so obvious. Right. But to see you walking with your daughter, you know, there and just, it was just a beautiful setting, and just a beautiful ceremony.
Okay, and that's why I'm starting to cry again, because it was perfect. Yeah. And that's what I said to her. And I know the effort she put in. I wasn't going to start crying.
Okay, you know what? Don't. But
I don't want.
And
I don't
the things
cry.
That she, you know, the things that she said about there just was love. There, and you know what? I know that there are a lot of listeners because I already got like 3 texts saying, "I hope you talk about the wedding." So,
mission accomplished.
But,
just
to see how much love and how what she expressed, you know, to you and your wife Suzanne about, you know, how much she cherishes you as parents and how much you've taught her. I mean, it was beautiful.
It was. And first, I was thrilled I didn't cry during my toast. Because,
okay, and I know exactly why you did it, though.
Every time I practiced it, I started sobbing like I was on the dock again. But I got through it. And the laugh lines kind of bolstered me. I thought, okay, this is going over okay.
Yes. Yes, then, and your
great
two other daughters were just, I loved their toast to their sister.
Yeah.
And so, to the couple. Yeah, I thought it was fun.
It was wonderful. So, but that was what struck me, and that was what I said on Twitter, that everything was so perfect. It was my vision of heaven. It really was. All your friends and family in one place, dancing, eating.
And there was a lot of dancing. And you know who dances like crazy?
Yeah.
Paul Moyer.
Yeah,
Paul
this guy. So Paul Moyer was something
you
else.
You got clips?
I have one.
Paul was sending out selfie videos of all of us dancing.
All night. I think the last one I got was at 3 in the morning, and we were home by midnight.
Oh.
But
oh, yeah.
he was sending them all night long. And then I got more in the morning. But this is one of them. But good thing he did, because he documented the whole evening for us. But this is one of them, which in case anybody, we did talk about this leading up to the wedding, the first dance, which song you would agree to dance to, I guess. And here's the answer with a little bit of Paul at the beginning.
Oh, yeah. This is the dad.
Their father, daughter, but you know I love this one.
Anyway, you can't really hear anything else other than that.
Well, you had talked about it on Thursday, and you didn't want to do it. And I'm so glad. I mean, I was
yeah, it's
bawling at that point.
Time to Say Goodbye by Sarah Brightman and Andrea Bocelli. And, you know, it's the song, my daughter's favorite Bellagio Fountain song and mine. But I thought it'd be too...
It was perfect.
But the thing is, she had this long train on her dress, and I was just worried that I was going to step on it and trip her. So I was so focused on that, I didn't cry during the dance.
Well, and you guys had a nice dance. It wasn't just the eighth grade hand on shoulders dance.
Yeah, we rehearsed a little bit.
It was a nice dance. And so that's why you were more focused on steps.
And my wife and I took dance lessons for the last 3 months to get ready for this. So
awesome.
It was just really wonderful. But I want to thank the folks at Kenmore Air and Todd and his family, his son, who's a high school junior, was helping out on Friday and Saturday. And it was heaven on earth. I'm looking forward to heaven after experiencing it on Saturday. So,
and thank you for letting us be a part of it, too.
I know. And I would have invited Sean, but he's never met my daughter. I mean, I feel bad. Nicole and Ursula are talking about this, and Sean was all left out.
That's all right. I think I've met your daughters at a random event. I think it might have been when we were playing the ponies, like a year ago or so.
Yeah.
But that's fine, Dory. Okay. My feelings aren't hurt. Huh?
Didn't you go to a couple concerts this weekend anyway? You
have plans? I was busy, Dory.
Oh, okay.
I was really busy.
Yeah, that's what Nicole told me. She told me you had stuff going. She said, don't torment Sean with a competing invitation.
Don't need it.
Yeah, okay. All right. So it was just wonderful and so blessed.
How's your knees? How are your knees
I didn't take off a dance.
I was impressed.
I didn't take off one song.
You didn't?
No, we were all out on the dance floor the entire time.
It's like three solid. And then one other quick thing that I'll tell, and I said this to you off the air, Ursula.
Yeah.
That one thing I realized leading up to this is, I think I have much better friends than I am a friend. Because for days, I mean, and Moyer was one of the people, but Brock and Wyman, they're sending me texts, 3 days, can't wait to celebrate your big event. And I've never done that before a friend's wedding. And I realized every time, and I heard from so many other friends that said the same thing, and I realized I have never done that. To build up somebody before their big events, and I realized I was given this object lesson in friendship, living up to it.
Well, I hope you don't mind, but I'm going to confess to something right now, which is that I shared that sentiment that you shared with me off air with those guys that you just mentioned, and they said you are silly and you have been an awesome friend to all of them.
Oh, well, that's very sweet. So anyway, what a fun time. Everybody here, if you don't have kids yet, crank out a couple, and then in about 25 to 30 years, have a night like that. That's my advice to all the millennials. That's my advice to Nicole.
That's my advice, okay.
Sean, crank out a couple. Crying out loud. All right.
You forget to tell them, though.
I think I did this past weekend. Not sure, though.
You forget to add, but it makes you forget the part that, they cost you about $250,000 by the time they're 18.
Oh, yeah.
Throw in a few, education dollars in there and et cetera. But
then you get a night like
this.
Then you
get a great night.
Yeah. So it was the best. So thank you both for being there and being part of that. It's very much appreciated. We do actually have some news to talk about here in the Fastest 15. And, man, the scariest story of the weekend is what happened to this little kid up in Everett who was pricked by a dirty needle that was left in a park. And our news partners at Channel 7, Cairo 7, they talked to a babysitter who was at the park who said, we see this all the time up here.
Looking for needles. that our kids don't need to be playing with.
And she said that, you know, the fact that this little boy got pricked with a dirty needle.
It was horrific. The things that are going through your head when you see this dirty, used needle and a three-year-old boy standing there with blood coming out of his fingertip. It's crazy.
But this is our entire region now. Snohomish County, they don't prosecute for drugs. This is our entire region now.
When you're holding that needle and knowing that that just poked a child and how dirty this thing was and just lying on the ground, it was just terrifying. I mean, I went to bed thinking about it, and I woke up with my heart sinking.
And can you imagine for the parents of this little kid? They have to wait now to see if their son's been infected with anything horrible. And Channel 7, they had a photographer up at that park the next morning. And in the area where the needle was, there was this guy who looks like a complete meth head. And the Cairo 7 photographer talked to this guy and wondered if he was the one who left the needle there.
Just after our interview, we spotted a man looking through that same spot where that needle was found. He admitted to our photographer that he was looking for drug paraphernalia.
Smoking meth last night, and we broke it on accident.
You're smoking meth here?
Yeah.
You know this is where kids play, right?
I do.
And you think it's kind of dangerous?
Yeah.
So our photographer told him to leave.
Get the hell out of here, okay?
And so the Cairo photographer says, get the hell out of here. And the druggie punches him and knocks his camera. It's just a reflection of what we have in our parks because of the complete lack of government's ability to deal with this crisis and the desire still to bring these drug addicts from all around the country into our region so they can pass a head tax. They can justify getting more money that will not go to the homelessness, but it's going to fill gaps in the budget. I'll tell you more about that coming up. That there is your Fastest 15.
This has been the Fastest 15 Minutes in the News. Fast. Dory's Fastest 15.
You give us 15 minutes, we'll give you the world. Saul Spady is the grandson of the founder of Dick's Drive-In, and he is leading a business charge to get that head tax overturned. He's going to join me in the studio next. Well, it has been the dominant story in our region for the last several months. And, of course, last week, the Seattle City Council decided to impose the biggest tax on employers for the crime of hiring people. It's never happened before in the country to this extent where they're going to tax the biggest employers, $275 per person per year. And they said it's for homelessness, but is it? Saul Spady is one of the guys. He's the grandson of the founder of Dick's Drive-In and one of the guys who's trying to lead a citizens initiative to repeal this head tax. Joins me in studio. Hey, Saul, good to finally meet you in person.
Yeah, it's great to be here. No, it's, you know, in many ways, it's really a disappointing time because I think the city just learned that this council isn't willing to listen to their voice. But on the other side, it's a really exciting time. I'm holding the petition for referendum in front of me right now.
Nice.
No one can see it because we're on radio. But I got these on Saturday. We've been handing them out. And I promise you, yesterday, I think there was about 50 volunteers out all around Seattle collecting signatures. And this hasn't been led by big business. Obviously, this is a tax on the largest businesses in Seattle. But what we've missed is it's 150,000 jobs.
Yeah.
And when there's 150,000 jobs at risk, everyone in the city wakes up. And so there are single family homeowners. I'm a renter. I'm a small business owner. And we're just out here because we believe we deserve a voice. And the council really isn't willing to listen.
Yeah, well, and it was so clear, the opposition to this. But it's also clear that their desire for our money is insatiable. It just never ends. And today they're talking to these waterfront property owners and they want to tax them. It's not taxes. You know, it's an assessment. For $200 million, it's just a never-ending hijacking of money.
Yeah, and you know, many ways we're blessed in this region that we have the budgets we have available to us. I mean, $4.8 billion is $2 billion more than the city of Boston, which is the exact same size as the city of Seattle. And we wonder why the business community is pushing back. And it's not because we don't want to solve homelessness. I'd like to point out that the business community has really taken on family homelessness the last 5 years. And I've said it on this show. you know, Mary's Place provides 700 shelter beds for $8 million. Mm-hmm. The city is telling us that for $50 million a year for 5 years, at the end of it, total, we'll get 360 shelter beds and 500 affordable housing units. And then everyone's shocked that we're pointing to these numbers and saying, well, if you just invested that money in Mary's Place, we wouldn't have family homelessness. If maybe you partnered with the Millionaires Club to create an organization, a system where you can get a temporary job cleaning the streets, maybe people would start making their way out of homelessness. Versus encampments have increased every year for the past 3 years as spending has gone up.
They do not want to solve homelessness. The homelessness is a convenient visual for them to justify never-ending taxes.
Yeah, and it's a really complicated issue. When we look at homelessness overall, it seems impossible. But what if we break it down and we say, all right, with family homelessness, we should be working with the business community and building emergency shelter like Mary's Place. For those who are addicts, we need to get them more time in rehab. For people who are my friends who are millennials who can't afford to live in the type of housing they want to live in, dorm-style housing, I have a friend who's been crashing at my couch for the last 3 months on and off, and it's because he's on a waiting list for one of like three dorm style housing buildings in the Central District that he can totally afford, but there just aren't enough of them. And, you know, I like to jump to the final one is we need to be the last city in the country to actually enforce our standing encampment laws. This is 21st century America. It isn't the 1990s. Every single one of the people you pass on the street, most of them have cell phones. Most of them are networked to each other. And there's a big star in the city of Seattle. And they know that if they come here, they're not going to be rejected. They're going to be given free meals and they're going to be given services that don't encourage them to get back on their feet.
Well, and that's where the future is so dire, because we are in an economic bubble. Business communities tapped out. I mean, they're scared now that you can't, you know, if you have a food truck, it's going to be stripped bare by you know, the heroin addicts overnight. And I've had so many business people who tell me they're scared. Economies run in cycles. We're going to have a downturn at some point. When we do, it's going to be the biggest economic city collapse, maybe in our nation's history.
Unless we're ready. So the downturn's happening right now. The city has already reported that the projected budget they were going to have in 2019 is going to be about $30 million short. And lo and behold, they're planning to use this money that was needed for homelessness, potentially for the general fund, to fill that gap. The year after that, it's going to keep going down. And that's why I say right now we have a referendum on growth in the city. That's why we're going to approve. I think citizens will put this on the ballot. They're going to be signing it. You can support us at No Seattle Head Tax on Facebook and download it yourself. They're going to approve this. We're going to put it on the ballot. We're going to reject this. And then in 2019, I'm calling it a referendum on the Head Tax 7. And these are the 7 council members that refused to listen to their community and voted for an anti-growth initiative in a time where we need to be protecting growth in Seattle. But instead of being reactive to the growth, we need to be proactive stewards and create a 21st century city where, let's say there's a great article in the Times about a Millionaires Club participant who's from California, who came down the coast, has been homeless for the last 5 years, and he's gotten his first job at Safeco, and he's getting back on his feet. We can't reject these people who are in our community, but we need to give them fair and equitable options to get back on their feet. And that includes temporary jobs, that includes dorm style housing, and it does include enforcement of the encampment laws that Seattle already has in place.
Yeah, we had over the weekend a kid up in Everett who got pricked by a needle that a meth addict had left in a park. And it is a region-wide problem. And what Saul said just a second ago, the budget director, the director of the city's budget office, he told a council meeting last week,
you can't do that on a sustained basis.
And he's talking about the deficit that's coming to Seattle. And this head tax may not go for homelessness at all. It could go to just fill the gaps in their budget.
And for those services, far from declining, is continuing to increase.
Okay, so they already have a gap in what they've promised with homelessness funding. So this head tax, they've been promising all of these new buildings. But number one, job one has to be addiction counseling. You got to get people clean or at least give them the option. And if they refuse that option, then you got to do what you just said, and that is enforce the law. We're the only city in the country that lets people camp out on sidewalks the way we do.
And, you know, it's not that growth isn't tough. Growth is something where you really do need a council that's engaged, that's looking for solutions, that's working with everyone else. But what we have here is if there's encampment laws everywhere else in the country And we're the only city that's not enforcing our encampment laws. And we really need to confront that. We're the only city of our size not enforcing these encampment laws. And then we have the highest per capita homelessness in the country. Those things are correlated.
Yeah, and we spend can't, more.
And we're ignoring that.
And we spend more per capita on homeless than any city in the country, maybe the world. And so, yes, of course, all the homeless people are going to migrate here. And it's going to get worse before it gets better. So, okay, so if people want to help out on this referendum, what do they do?
Well, keep a lookout for people gathering signatures. We have volunteers out all over the city already. If you want to get petitions yourself, go to No Seattle Head Tax on Facebook. I have a PDF available for you to download. Try to print it out on 11 by 17, which I know is tough. The city doesn't make it easy for us. Make sure it's double-sided, and then all of your signatures need to be in either blue or black ink. I'm responding on No Seattle Head Tax. If you're looking for 15, 20 petitions, I'll drive them out to you in the next couple days and make sure you have that access. Kind of in final statement, we as a community need to stand up. Shama Sawant has already started to make a boycott list. And that cracks me up because honestly, I think we need to create a boycott list, a list of all the businesses that care about creating common sense solutions, equitable, fair answers for the city. And let's buy these guys' product, because this isn't liberal or, you know, conservative. This isn't progressive versus Republicans. This is literally a Seattle issue. And as you said, budgets are going to get a little leaner. And we need a council that's willing to find common sense solutions, partnering with an incredible business community and an incredibly driven philanthropic community that is making progress on this.
Yep, absolutely. What it's a battle between is the reality of those of us who have to live in the real world and the fantasy land of politics. Saul Spady, appreciate you coming in. Good luck with this. Keep me posted.
Sounds good. Dory, can I leave you a petition?
Absolutely. Yeah, I'll send it out. I'll find somebody to take it out for me. I'm not a Seattle resident yet.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I know. All right, lots more straight ahead here on the Dory Monson Show. The Seattle Mariners continue to play really good ball. And next half hour, we're going to give away some Mariners tickets to a lucky listener. So stay tuned to the big lead at 2, when we'll give you a chance to win some Mariners tickets. Starbucks made another policy announcement over the weekend. On Saturday, they came out, and it was a week or so ago. They said no longer will they kick people out of the store if they don't buy anything. And this is all going back to several weeks ago when two black guys went to a Starbucks to meet a third person, and the Starbucks employees called the police because they hadn't purchased anything. And Starbucks is now going to close all of their stores in a week or so and have some racial bias training.
Right, for the afternoon of May 29th.
Did you hear what the announcement was this weekend?
Well, weren't they trying to clarify?
No,
what,
it's an addition.
An additional
policy. They now say that you can use the bathrooms and hang out without making any purchases. The bathroom thing is new, because
actually, the bathroom thing was announced last week. I think the thing that's new is now they're saying that you can stay as long as you want.
Right, and without making any purchases.
Without making any purchases. So they want Starbucks to be what they call a third place. Like, you have home, you have church, you have Starbucks.
Yeah, and there is a great couple of bookstores around here called Third Place Books. And they have there's one walking distance from my house.
I love Third Place Books.
I do too. And they have a commons area, and that was and I often schedule meetings in that commons area, and you don't have to buy anything. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of their whole policy. The problem is, in my neighborhood, I was talking to one of my neighborhood cops, and I said, why aren't there any homeless people? We're so close to Seattle. And he said, we make them move on. Because the first thing we do is we offer them services, and if they won't accept the services, we tell them they can't stay. And they move them on. Now, this new Starbucks thing, it means every Starbucks in Seattle is going to essentially become a homeless shelter.
Well, I don't know that it's only the homeless I'd be worried about. I think there are just people who are very cheap. And we'll sit there and they'll swig one cup of coffee or sip it very slowly and stay there for 8 hours.
But some have been.
Or not even buy anything.
Right. But I just think, I mean, I'm looking, Business Insider, everyone in the business industry this afternoon is going, what in the world is Starbucks thinking? The headline, Starbucks just broke one of the biggest rules in the restaurant industry, and it reveals a huge problem for the restaurant giant. And it says that it's counter to every logical business theory. You make money based on customers buying food and drinks, not loitering on their laptop or popping in to use the bathroom. And in Seattle, it is going to be, they are going to become homeless shelters. Look at the library. You go to the downtown library where, you know, I told you last time I went there, there was a homeless guy sitting on one of these, seats, padded seats, got up, huge urine stain where he had been sitting. And on it goes.
I'm curious how long Starbucks is going to go without clarifying it again, because the pendulum has swung too far. I mean, you know, how about just not have your employees be jerks and wrongly throw people or have them arrested?
Well, yeah, I still don't know the whole story behind that one, but it sounds,
I think even Starbucks admits, you know, we screwed up.
Right. Right. The Wall Street Journal has a story that just moved this afternoon. Starbucks is trying to clarify. Oh, look, in Fox News right now, they're featuring Starbucks' new policy. Wall Street Journal right now. Starbucks says drug use and sleeping unacceptable as it clarifies guest policy.
Yes.
Okay, so
you have to use the spaces as intended, be considerate of others, communicate with respect, and act responsibly.
Yeah, but you're introducing the entire homeless population to your stores, and I don't know how they're going to keep, you know, because I heard from one listener who said, yeah, I've been to a Starbucks, I see a guy buy a 50-cent glass of ice and then go into the bathroom for a half hour and do a sitz bath in the sink, apparently, and it's, I don't know what they're
thinking
here.
Yeah, I don't want to, yeah, I think they're overreacting potentially to what happened, because it got such bad publicity.
But the
other part of it is Howard Schultz he's always talked about wanting to build community, and he wants Starbucks cafes to be that place where people can congregate.
This is going to be a disaster for them.
I know, but we shouldn't demonize the it's not just, I mean, it'll just be people who don't need
it. No, it's homeless. I can say that.
But it's not just the
sure
homeless.
Sure, that's people, the majority, you know, of the problem here.
But I know, but I talk to, I have a college student. He tells me about how he'll buy a cup of coffee and stay there for hours and hours and hours and study.
Yeah, but at least he bought a cup of coffee. The homeless is not going to buy a cup of coffee. Okay, we got a lot of news to talk about in the big lead. I'd like to know what you think about this Starbucks policy. I really do think it's a disaster. Maybe you disagree with me. I know somebody who does. You can text me at 98973, 98973. Get your comments next.